Session number 13518, reel number 3.
Three. You've just given this order to withdraw, you said.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I made my way up the wall, taking cover as I could. And then, after about 30, 40 yards, there was a wide open bit with no cover at all. So it was a case of running as fast as one could. So I ran with my rifle, and I had 90 rounds of ammunition around me, and my greatcoat as well, over the top. I ran across this last 50 yards, and I was just about out of breath and panting, and at last I came to a little bit of wall that I could flop down again. And I lay down there to recover in my breath. And when I looked it up, I could actually see bullets going like high-velocity bumblebees. They must have been using old black powder bullets and lead-filled bullets sort of thing, because one would never see a normal bullet like that. But these things, you could see the things disappearing into the distance sort of thing. Well, I think then a little before, I'd forgotten that, a little before Holloway had sent an Arab sergeant back. He said, go back and see if you can get help from police headquarters. So he went back to police headquarters. I suppose he did anyway. Because a little while after that, we heard an aeroplane coming. But, unfortunately, as the aeroplane came, so the clouds all came in as well. And it started to rain very heavy, and then we didn't really see the aeroplane anymore. And it rained very, very hard, and huge, thick clouds, that mist, so that visibility was reduced to about 10 yards. Now, the rest of us were able to to withdraw then under this cloud cover. And obviously, the Arab armed band, they must have decided that it was a good opportunity for them to get out as well. So away they went. And as we got up the bank, Ronnie Broadhurst was the police officer in charge of Hebron, and he came out then with a couple of platoons, I should think, of some Scottish regiment that had come down with him. But we were all too late, and the clouds had come down, and our visibility had all gone. So the Arab gang all dispersed, and we withdrew. And unfortunately, we had lost 8 horses altogether. Some were injured, and we had to sort of put them down. We had to shoot them because they got broken legs and bad injuries. But one or two had been killed outright by the gang. One horse, he'd slipped his holder during a bit of a melee and galloped off, and he was found a couple of days later. The Arabs had shot him farther down the bank, and he'd stolen his saddle. He was all gone. We lost that lot. But from then on, we had a different man came down. Jack Birch came. Inspector Holliday was relieved of his command of that mounted column, and Inspector Jack Birch came down with an old sergeant called Buck Adams. And then we started again patrolling around, and we searched and searched and searched, but never came up with this gang anymore. But I heard actually that he'd been killed by an Arab district officer, who the Arab district officer was an administrative officer, and he'd I think he'd This, the rumour at the time was that he'd been threatened that unless he got this man he would lose his job. And I think he probably paid somebody else to help him and they ran him to earth and shot him themselves. But we didn't see any more of him at all. Although we patrolled around there for another couple of months and we moved out to a place called Tubas. We'd been down to Beit Jabrin and to Tabas, and we patrolled all these areas around there and never had another shot fired at us at all. Well, about June, I was taken back then with the whole of the party, withdrawn to Jerusalem. And when I got back to Jerusalem, I was able to get a transfer back again to Artuf, where I'd previously been. I was glad to get down there. But I shouldn't have gone off on my own, I suppose, really, but I was told I'd been transferred, so I saddled up my horse and I rode out. And when I got past a place called Abu Ghosh or Enab, a British officer stopped and he said, "What are you doing riding along here on your own?" I said, "I'm on transfer to Artuf." He said, "Well, you shouldn't be on your own. You should have an escort or something with you. It's terribly dangerous for you to be riding along here. You'll get shot, you'll get killed, and your rifle and will be stolen and everything else." So he went to the local station at Enab and arranged for a party to escort me down to Bab al-Wad. And I got down to Bab al-Wad. And when I got down to Bab al-Wad, an escort from Artuf had come along the Artuf track and met me at Bab al-Wad and took me back down there. Well, I stayed down there for another few months until I was promoted. I was promoted to sergeant from there and sent up. But there was one very interesting thing happened. One day, while I was at Artuf, there was only myself and Stacey Barham, who was then the sergeant in charge of the post. We were the only two fit people. Two were ill with malaria, and a couple of others were up in Jerusalem in attending the hospital for medical treatment, and just Stacey and myself were fit. And an old Arab had just ridden into the post and he'd tied his horse up and he was talking to Stacey Barham. He tacked with him, must have been with him for about half an hour or more, and then away he went. And Stacey called me then and he said to me, "You know, we're really in trouble he said. "Now that chap is the Mukhtar from one of the villages nearby, and he's always promised me that if ever I was in trouble he would come and let me know." And he said, "And he has just come today." And he said, "Mr. Barham, you are in very serious trouble now." He said, "I always promised you that I would come and let you know if you were." He said, "And you're in trouble now." He said, "Because the armed gangs around here, they are forming up to attack this place. They're going to come and attack your police post and the Jewish settlement. There are about 3,000 strong of them." He said, "Now, I have got to come with them." He said, "If I don't come, if I don't join in with them," he said, "they'll shoot me and my family." He said, "So I've got to agree." He said, "But I promised you that if you were in trouble, I would come and let you know." He said, "And now I'm coming now." He said, "If they knew that I was doing this," he said, "they would shoot me as soon as I get back." But he said, "I haven't told anybody where I'm going and so on." He said, "But don't disregard my warning. He said, because there are 3,000 rifles there just waiting to come and take you. So Stacy said, well, I don't know. What we can do, he said, the telephone's out of order. We've got a radio operator here, and sometimes the radio works and sometimes it doesn't. He said, I'll see if I can get a message. Can get a message up to Jerusalem. But there is one young Jewish supernumerary policeman here who's got a car and he wants to go to Jerusalem. So I'm going to give him a message and hope he gets through with it. So away he went. Well, we waited that night about midnight. We thought, there's something going on. Someone about. Listen. So we'd heard this noise down that we heard a barbed wire barricade just at the entrance to the settlement area. And a voice called out, don't shoot, this is the Black Watch, we've come down to help you. So we went down and opened the gate, and who it was Bernard Ferguson when he was a young lieutenant. A young subaltern he was then with the Black Watch. And he was in charge of a special picked squad of expert marksmen and machine gunners and guerrilla fighters. They really were. He had about 20 of them in this squad. And they had come down over the hills when the message had come down about this attack imminent on us. And they had come down and reached us. They came across over the hills. They didn't come along the track. They came over the hills and worked in the moonlight by compass sort of thing, compass reading. And they found us all right there. They hadn't been there very long, and we heard an awful noise down on the railway line. I thought, oh my God, this is the gang there dismantling the railway, because they've been doing that quite often, you know, knocking the railways out. So when the train came along, it ran off the doings. So we heard this noise going on, and Bernard Ferguson and two or three policemen and half of his squad, they went down there to see what was on. But lucky they came back. It was nothing so bad as we thought. It was an Arab lorry had had a bad puncture, and he was banging the rim back on his wheel where he'd sort of repaired the tire. He was banging his rim back on, but it sounded just as though he was knocking the rails out of the railway line.
What impression did Bernard Ferguson make on you?
Well, he was a grand man, really. He was a very, very fine chap, I think. He stayed down with us for two or three days, and he gave me instruction on priming hand grenades. I didn't know anything about those things at all, but we had some hand grenades. And when hand grenades are packed, Mills bombs, sort of things, they're packed. The detonators are packed separately. One needs to sort of unplug the end and take the detonator and put it in and then screw it up again. But I didn't know anything about that. But he told me about that and showed me how to do it. But he was very, very good. Of course, then during the war, he made a real name for himself. Then after that, he was Governor General of Australia, and he died maybe 8 years ago when he died, something like that. Sir Bernard, anyone, of course, but when I knew him, he was just Lieutenant Bernard Ferguson. Yes. Well, that was one of the episodes I had. Another bit we'd had before, they burned the railway station down at Artouf as well, but we didn't really get involved in that. It was about a mile away from us. and with binoculars, although it was nighttime, with binoculars you could see scores of them down there, all armed men, and they set fire to the railway station buildings and burnt it all down. But my sergeant in charge had been instructed that at night time we were not to go outside. Our job was to defend ourselves in the settlement and not to go outside. So with the railway burning down below, I'm afraid we didn't go down there. But then later on we heard, it's a good job you didn't go down, because 200 men had been placed in a little valley, they're in the wadi, they'd been placed in there to ambush you and shoot you as soon as you'd come down. So I think if two or three of us had gone down, I'm afraid we would have had no luck. I'm afraid we would have all been wiped out on that occasion. Well, that was some of the business there. Now another memory I have too of watching at Artouf, coming down, I was up on the little watchtower having a look during the daytime, and hear noise of firing along the valley where the railway came out of the hills. Well, there's something going on there. And then troops started to emerge. And then we could see more and more troops coming out. And you could see bursts of like smoke when shots were being fired on the hillside. They'd had a running battle, apparently. The army had had a run. They'd come down the railway line. They'd had a running battle with various Arab gangs all the way down. And then, unfortunately, when they got down onto this open bit and they were making across to come over to Artouf, where they were going to get their transport to come down and take them back, one poor soldier was hit right in the back and killed. So they had to load him onto a little stretcher and carry him across. I thought it was such a pity, really. He'd come all that way down from Jerusalem. He got down just within a stone's throw of our place, really, and he got hit in the back and killed. Awful business there. But that was just all those days leading 1938 then. When the Munich business was going on with Neville Chamberlain going talking to Hitler about the war that was likely to happen in Europe, and we were fighting our own little war out there. But then after that, when I was promoted, I was sent to Bethlehem, to reopen Bethlehem Station. And I hadn't been there very long before I was woken one night. I was one of the two junior sergeants there, and the senior sergeant was a chap called Samuels, and the inspector in charge was Hook was his, no, Adams, we used to call him Hook because he'd had his hand knocked off by a bomb. And he'd got a, like Captain Hook. He'd had him. We used to call him Captain Hook.
He had a hook instead of a hand.
He had a hook instead of a hand, yes. Adams was his name, yes. There, we'd been there for just a little while, and bang, bang, I woke one night, a tinkling glass. I thought, God above, what's this? And then bang, bang, I said, bloody hell, we're being fired on. So I hopped out of bed and put some clothes on, and I went up on the roof, and the guard were, I love this, they said, there, just over here, somebody firing at us, and they're banging away with their guns. And then Inspector Adams came up and said, don't shoot. And Sergeant Samuel said, what do you think, we're going to throw stones at them? So he said, no, don't shoot, wait, keep it quiet. So anyway, we didn't take much notice of that. We had a look and then found a few more flashes, and we opened fire and we drove these people off that were firing at us there. Then I heard a little while later that poor old Adams was so upset about it all, really, because he'd asked that his wife be allowed to come and join him at Bethlehem. He said, because it's nice and quiet and peaceful. And Nebbi Samuel said to me afterwards, he said the reason he didn't want to fire any ammunition off us, because if he did, we'd have to report it, and they would cancel the permission for his wife to join. Well, that was getting near my first 3 years then, and after about 3 or 4 months in Bethlehem, I was due to go on UK leave, and I went home for 6 months. No, not home for 6 months, for 3 months leave.
That must have been in 39 then.
In 1939, yes.
Was war declared whilst you were away?
No, I got back. I went for 3 months leave. That's what we had in those days. Not 6 months leave. We got 6 months leave when I was in Africa. And your 3 months leave included your travel time. So we were about 2 months in England and a fortnight each way on the ship. And I think I got back before my birthday, really, in July. So I went April, May and June. Yes, I got home in April, probably in the middle of April. Middle of June, I would have probably been on my way back, and my birthday was on the 11th of July, so I was back in time for my birthday. And that was a time when there was still an awful lot of trouble in the country. But as soon as the war started, the Arabs said, this is the time for us to stop any trouble with the British government, because the British government got too much trouble on their hands with Germany now. And they disbanded all the armed forces they'd had, or these armed gangs, you see. But unfortunately, when this sort of thing happens, there's always a few who say, oh no, this is too good, I've got a rifle and I can go and do a little bit of armed robbery, and I'm not going to give up like this. So although the vast majority of them went back to their villages and went to their families and carried on with their occupations of, you know, agriculture, etc., the other few form into real vicious armed gangs and start to prey on the villagers and to rob passers-by and just make themselves up to little robber gangs. And I was stationed up in Jenin then, when I went back off leave. And we had one gang like this that were engaged by an army patrol of the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, and they were wiped out, 8 of them, you know, and they were all black Arabs, sort of thing, but descendants of slaves, you know, because the normal Arab is almost as light as you and I, sort of just wheat complexion, they call them, sort of thing. But you find a lot of the black ones among them. They are descendants of slaves that have come over from Africa.
And it was the Black Watch which eliminated them?
No, the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, they were named. of that lot. They wiped that lot out. The Black Watch were the ones that came to help us when we're down in Hebron. But then we had quite a few years of peace.
But you know? did you have anything to do with the elimination of that particular gang?
No, only I went out and collected the things afterwards when this army patrol had wiped them out, and they sent a message in, and I went out with a little party to collect the bodies and bring them in.
Where was this?
Jenin, just at the back of Jenin.
And that would be 1939 as well?
Yes, 1939.
Did they have much in the way of equipment?
Only rifles, and you know, they'd got khaki clothes that they wore, but they just had rifles and bandoliers. That's all. They haven't got any machine guns or automatic weapons. They're just ordinary rifles. Then after that, where'd I go next? Oh, I went from there, from Jenin, I went to Coast Guard station at Givat Olga, which is halfway between Haifa and Jaffa, right on the coast. And that these Coast Guard stations were built originally to keep a check on illegal Jewish immigration. That's what they were there for. But with war starting, they were being used for coastal protection against Italian or German submarines and incursions like that sort of thing. They could bring in secret agents and drop them in. So we were patrolling the coast then, particularly, weren't seeing that Jewish illegal immigration, not really then. We were just seeing people come trying to get into the country, you know, German secret agents would try to come in there. So that was my main job there. But after a little while, there were a few boats with Jewish immigrants, and they'd come across somewhere. They were towed into Haifa. I can't think quite where they must have originated from. Greece, probably. Might have come out from Greece and Cyprus and across that way. But after the Germans had sort of taken Greece and Crete, they wouldn't have had much chance to come any more that way. But there was another funny thing happened. I was patrolling up the seashore one day, and there's a whine of a bullet come right over, whizz, unmistakably a 303 rifle bullet. So I had an Arab sergeant with me at the time, and we cantered across to the sand dunes and put our horses into a dip where we get a bit of protection.